Welcome to Energy Law Roundup, your comprehensive weekly briefing on legal news and developments in the energy industry from Texas and across the country, always in 30 minutes or less. And now, your host for Energy Law Roundup, business litigator and oil and gas trial lawyer, Tom Charlone.
It is the week of May 22nd, 2017. Again, my name is Tom Charlone. I'm a litigation partner at Kane Russell, Coleman & Logan, resident in our firm's Houston, Texas office. In a case that has been closely watched in the oil and gas industry, on Friday, the Texas Supreme Court decided whether drilling through a mineral estate, one which is not under lease by the driller, to access a reservoir beneath a bordering tract, constitutes a form of trespass. The operator in the case, Anadarko Petroleum, obtained permission from the surface owner of a tract adjacent to the company's leasehold to spud a well and drill directionally into the mineral estate next door. The owner of the mineral rights under the surface of the spud site, Lightning Oil, argued that Anadarko trespassed when it bored through Lightning's mineral estate. Late last week, the Texas High Court affirmed decisions from both the appellate and trial courts that had roundly rejected Lightning's claims. As the Texas Supreme Court sees it, the surface owner is the master of the earth undergirding the surface, and therefore it alone will usually have the authority to authorize this kind of subsurface activity. The court acknowledged that the appropriate test is fact-intensive, involving a careful balancing of the competing interests of all the involved parties. The fundamental question will be the extent to which the horizontal drilling will cause the unleased mineral owner to suffer a loss of oil and gas. In Lightning's case, only, quote, a small amount of minerals were lost through that process, end quote, and according to the justices, this is just not enough to rise to the level of mineral trespass. In particular, this is what the court had to say. Quote, in that context, we have no doubt that individual interests in the oil and gas lost through being brought to the surface as part of drilling a well are outweighed by the interests of the industry as a whole and society in maximizing oil and gas recovery. That being so, we conclude that the loss of minerals Lightning will suffer by a well being drilled through its mineral estate is not a sufficient injury to support a claim for trespass. Lightning also argued that even if Anadarko's existing well had not caused it to suffer substantial harm, the operator's slate of proposed wells would prejudice Lightning's ability to produce its minerals in the future. This, according to Lightning, would result in precisely the kind of irreparable harm that would support the entry of an injunction against Anadarko. The court was unimpressed with this argument because Lightning had adduced virtually no evidence of such harm. On this score, Justice Phil Johnson, writing for an undivided court, was direct and to the point. Quote, speculation is not enough. The case in the Texas Supreme Court is Lightning Oil Company v. Anadarko E&P Onshore LLC, case number 15-0910. In other news, it turns out that the Texas Railroad Commission will not, in fact, ride off into the sunset. In Texas, all state agencies effectively have an expiration date. Each is periodically abolished by operation of law, unless the legislature passes a bill to extend its existence. Established in 1977, the Texas Sunset Advisory Commission evaluates agencies and issues recommendations to lawmakers. According to the agency's website, quote, sunset answers a basic question for the Texas legislature. Are an agency's functions needed? And if so, how can the agency work better and save money for Texans? The Texas Railroad Commission, the regulatory body that oversees the oil and gas industry, has been closely scrutinized by Sunset staff in three separate investigatory cycles over the last year. The agency recommended a host of sweeping changes for the RRC, But last week, the Texas Senate dismissed the overwhelming majority of them when it passed House Bill 1818, which had previously been approved by vote of the House. The bill is now headed to the office of Governor Greg Abbott for his signature. The bill, which would extend the RRC's mandate through 2029, will become law unless the governor affirmatively vetoes it. Among the amendments recommended by Sunset staffers was to dub the RRC, rather antiseptically, the Texas Energy Resources Commission. Activist groups have been advocating for the branding reboot for ages, on the theory that the name, admittedly an artifact of vintage agency duties, leaves people scratching their heads and, if you credit the conspiracy theorists, equips the Railroad Commission to operate surreptitiously in the shadows. The name change was rejected by the legislature in a move that was applauded by those in the oil and gas business. The Railroad Commission has deep roots in the Lone Star State, having operated here continuously under the same name for over 125 years. The notion that bureaucrats would disrupt a long-standing tradition did not sit well with many industry insiders. Another perennial attack leveled at the RRC is that the three elected commissioners who run the agency fill their campaign coffers with money from the same companies they regulate. According to the estimates of some industry watchdogs, approximately 60% of the campaign funds raised by RRC commissioners can be traced to the energy sector. To the chagrin of the Sierra Club, House Bill 1818 does nothing to address this dynamic. All of this is not to suggest that the legislation is entirely bereft of new initiatives. Among other things, the bill provides for a monitoring and enforcement strategic plan for the Commission's oil and gas division, the promulgation of an alternative dispute resolution policy, and the imposition of pipeline safety and regulatory fees. Christy Craddock, the Railroad Commission's current chairman, had this to say about the bill's Senate approval in a public statement, quote, "Passage of the Railroad Commission's Sunset Review legislation has come at a critical time for the agency and the energy industry. With Texas gearing up for another energy boom, certainty and regulation is critical for energy companies who are now making hiring and investment decisions in communities across the state." In another decision that came out of the Texas Supreme Court on Friday, the Lone Star State's High Court put the kibosh on a Texas municipality's bid to hold the operators of gas compressor stations liable for the ostensibly harmful impacts of noise and pollution. The crux of the court's opinion is that the town was barred from proceeding under the applicable statute of limitations because it simply waited too long to sue. The town in question is Clark, Texas, a tiny hamlet close to the state's northern border with Oklahoma. Well, that's what the town used to be called for generations at least. Back in 2000, at a city council meeting attended by exactly a dozen residents, it was decided that the town would be renamed Dish in exchange for 10 years of free satellite television service from Dish Networks. The town, call it what you will, was also featured in the infamous and highly editorialized HBO documentary Gasland. In any event, I digress. The town first got around to suing the operators of the compressor stations in 2011. Its cornucopia of claims variously included mental anguish, trespass, and diminished property value. But here's the rub. The first round of complaints from Dish residents about pollution and noise from the compressor stations date all the way back to 2006, a full 5 years before the town put pen to paper to draft a petition. As the years went by, Dish residents petitioned the state to conduct tests, which came up empty, and also rattled its saber often, threatening litigation, but never actually following through. Dish's counterargument was that its residents were not fully tuned into the severity of the threat posed by the compressor stations until an environmental study was commissioned by the town in 2009. Additionally, residents fired back that the noise from the stations skyrocketed in 2009 and 2010, and that this material increase in volume should serve to reset the limitations period. The problem with these arguments is that they rest almost exclusively on the conjecture of some seriously self-interested parties. Here's what the state Supreme Court had to say in this regard. Quote, Texas law does not stand for the proposition that mere subjective affidavit evidence can defeat a limitations defense. After all, if that were the rule, a plaintiff's bare subjective assertions could always set the accrual date. End quote. The town relied, heavily but unsuccessfully, on a decades-old case, Natural Gas Pipeline Company of America v. Justice, where a municipality prevailed with noise and odor complaints, notwithstanding that it did not initiate litigation until 6 years after the offending facility had gone into operation. But in Justice, the town had actually come forth with objective, third-party proof that the complaint of conditions had become much more severe during the 2 years leading up to the lawsuit. The town of Dish, by contrast, had offered up nothing but their own self-serving affidavits, and to credit those without more would effectively be to eviscerate the statute of limitations. The case in the Supreme Court of Texas is Town of Dish v. Atmos Energy, case number 15-0613. As many of you know, I have a deep background in class action litigation, and often I counsel clients on the most efficient methods for nipping class actions in the bud before they metastasize into money-sucking litigation black holes that make for bad publicity and high-dollar figure exposure, even when the merits of the class claims are marginal at best. My response is usually the same. If at all possible, isolate individual fact issues, ones which will show that the class members' claims are sufficiently different that they will frustrate the economies of time and resources that justify use of the class mechanism in the first place. Courts across the country are becoming increasingly aggressive in denying class treatment at the onset and also in decertifying class actions after information of disparate factual circumstances emerges later in the litigation. This is exactly what happened recently when the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed the decertification and dismissal of a class action against ExxonMobil Pipeline in connection with a 2013 rupture of the company's Pegasus Pipeline in Mayflower, Arkansas. The Eighth Circuit explained that the district judge had correctly determined that the pipeline's features and the impact it has on tracts of land differ dramatically from location to location. It therefore would be a fiction to treat the plaintiffs, easement owners who span four states, as though they are all similarly situated on the facts with respect to the repair, replacement, or as the case may be, the removal of the pipeline. In this regard, the Court of Appeals explained that, quote, the plaintiffs here may assert all of the pipe for 850 miles is bad, but demonstrating breach is more complicated. Too many individual issues predominate over common ones, end quote. Moreover, even assuming for grins and giggles that none of these factual disparities exist, the interstate pipeline runs across thousands of miles and would therefore implicate the law of at least four separate jurisdictions, Missouri, Illinois, Arkansas, and Texas. On this score, the Eighth Circuit wrote that, quote, as the district court reasoned, proceeding as a class action was not the preferable method of adjudication because it would potentially invite the application of multiple conflicting state laws. The case in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit is Webb v. ExxonMobil Corp., case number 15-2879. Finally, in legal news about fracking out of the state of Colorado, the Attorney General there has petitioned the state Supreme Court to weigh in on how much deference should be given to health and environmental concerns in the course of the regulation of Colorado's mushrooming oil and gas industry. Cynthia Kaufman, the Colorado Attorney General, wants the state's highest court to review an intermediate appellate court's ruling that determined that regulators are duty-bound to give health and environmental considerations greater emphasis than they are now accorded. The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, the state agency responsible for overseeing the oil and gas business there, has historically taken the position that its mandate is to balance public safety and environmental considerations against oil and gas exploration and production activities. But in a March opinion, a Colorado appeals court held that the commission had misconstrued its statutory mission and that regulators are tasked with ensuring public environmental protections, not just balancing them against competing industry considerations. Needless to say, if the intermediate court's decision is allowed to stand, oil and gas companies in Colorado will be faced with regulators whose hands are tied in a way that could make operating there a costly and frustrating affair.
Thank you for listening to Energy Law Roundup. If you would like additional information about anything from today's episode, you can contact Tom at 210-446-6999 or by email at tom@charlone.net. New episodes of this podcast are available every week on the web at www.energylawroundup.com, your one-stop source for breaking news and developments in energy law.